Hi, my name is Stuart Weems and welcome to the Investopoly podcast. My goal is to share easy to understand, evidence-based, holistic insights to help you master the game of building wealth. And in this episode, I'd like to talk about what advice I would have for first-time property buyers and their parents. You know, quite often our clients contact us to talk about how they can potentially help their children into the property market, or they encourage their children to make contact with us. So for both those parties in a room, and put myself in their shoes, knowing what I know today, what advice would I give them? Well, the first thing I would say is that the first home or first property that you buy is arguably your most important financial decision in your life. Now, I don't want to overemphasize it or make people really nervous, but the reality is if you do a fantastic job, you know, you buy the right property at exactly the right time, in 5 years' time, you know, you could be in a situation where you've doubled your money. I'm not suggesting that that's what you should expect, but it's entirely possible. Again, you've got to have a bit of luck to go your way in terms of right timing and so forth. But, you know, it can really leapfrog or supercharge a person's, you know, financial journey. Because equity, when you're younger, you know, you've got a limited income typically, your income's growing, you're only starting your career. And so it's difficult to save those after-tax dollars. If you can make substantial gains through property equity, you know, that puts you miles ahead of your peers. But conversely, you can make an absolute doozy of purchase in terms of a mistake. You can buy a dud property and possibly you could end up losing money. It's hard to do in property, I guess, but it's certainly not impossible. And so you could be worse off in 5 years' time from now. And that's why if you look and you compare those two individuals where one's made a terrible disaster and one's been very lucky to end up with, you know, substantial short-term returns, and then you track if they continue to make, you know, good quality decisions, both of those people, one's going to be miles ahead. It's almost impossible for the other one to catch them. And so that's why I'm saying it's possibly the most important decision you will make in your lifetime. So as parents can help their children in terms of making a really good quality decision. Children can help their parents by listening to them. If they're well-meaning parents, of course they are, to try and help them. Now, that doesn't always happen. As a father myself, I know that children don't always listen to you, even if you do know better and you've been there before. So anyway, it really starts with buying well. And, you know, even if it's a first home, still trying to take that investment lens to that decision. I've spoken about before the three attributes that investment grade property must possess to be considered investment grade. And of course, you know, most first time buyers have a relatively limited budget, so they're going to have to make compromises in some of these factors. But the aim is to make as few compromises as possible. And those three attributes are identifying areas where there's a consistent imbalance in supply and demand. And so typically that's closer to the city rather than further away from it, where land supply is certainly finite and demand tends to outstrip supply. You want to look at past growth rates. So if the property or an area or location has a very long history of delivering more than 7% compounding returns, for example, from a capital growth perspective, well, chances are then in the long term, your property is going to double in value every 10 years based on that outcome. And then spending most of our money on underlying land value. Now, whether you're buying an apartment, that's still possible, or a house, but it's really about land. Buildings can appreciate to some degree, but it's really the land that's doing most of the appreciation in terms of capital growth. Now, as I said, first-time buyers, they don't have an endless budget typically, so they're going to have to make some compromises. Probably the first compromises you want to make are the accommodation. So that is, you know, you're better off to buy a small parcel of land in a very highly desirable location with a terrible property on it, for instance, because if the stats are showing that area has performed very well from a capital growth perspective, then you know the underlying land value is good quality. You know, if it's a quiet street, good orientation, all those sorts of things. Now, younger people don't always want to make those compromises in terms of the quality of the dwelling, but it's something that I would certainly counsel people to do, because really, again, what I'm trying to demonstrate here is that it's a really important decision. And if you make that compromise today, and nothing is ever free in life, mostly, you make that compromise today, you'll be well rewarded for it. But conversely, if you don't make the compromise, you know, you're going to take a haircut probably in terms of financial outcomes. And then if you can improve that dwelling over time as you live in it or occupy it, again, that's going to add to the capital growth prospects. So I don't want to encourage people to make really short-term decisions, and certainly that's not the right approach when it comes to property. But really, if you're a first-time buyer, your goal really is to be much better off in 5 to 10 years. You want to be able to utilize that equity to, you know, upgrade property, invest, and do those sorts of things, continue on your investment journey. Now, over that time, you know, younger people, their incomes will be rising, so that'll help with borrowing capacity, but still they need that equity in the property to be able to utilize it. So really, it's a question of what can I buy today that has a really strong underlying land value component in a good quality location where land supply is finite, but the demand is significant, and how can I get into that market and then make hopefully quick capital growth, quick in relative terms to, you know, what people might have to hold property for. And if you can do that, you can do that well and you execute that well, then that individual is going to be off to a really great start. So let's talk about, you know, what support is available for first-time buyers from the government, because there's a variety of different schemes and grants and assistance that's available. And I just wanted to talk through these to sort of set the scene. You know, how important are these? You know, should you, there's not too many things that are free in life. And so if the government's going to give you some money, of course, you should see if there's a way that you can avail yourself of that. But the trap is if you focus on these things too much, like if you say, what do I need to do to get this grant? You might end up making a mistake on the actual property that you're buying. Okay, so the first thing that's available to first-time buyers is what's called the First Home Super Saver Scheme. And essentially what it allows people to do is make tax-deductible contributions into super and use their super account as a like tax-effective savings account. And the benefit of that is that if you make additional concessional contributions into super, you claim a tax deduction for that. Those contributions, sorry, are only taxed at 15%. And then later on down the track, you can withdraw that money if you use it as a deposit or a contribution towards purchasing your first home. And you can save up to $50,000 of your own money in the First Home Super Saver Scheme. So it's very good, particularly for people that are on higher incomes, because obviously the tax saving benefit of contributing to into super or making additional contributions into super is better. So, you know, the closer you are to say 150, for example, so if you're sort of north of 120,000 in terms of taxable income, there's some decent tax benefits there. But these contributions have to be in addition to what your employer contributes. So they are additional personal contributions that you've made. It doesn't include what's called superannuation guarantee employer contributions. Now, the next scheme to talk about is what's called the home guarantee scheme, which I really like this scheme in terms of helping house affordability for first-time buyers. It doesn't necessarily flow through to stimulating prices. You know, the first homeowners grant, for example, was just some free money. And of course, vendors realized that first home buyers have this free money and so prices just rose. But this one doesn't necessarily contribute to prices. And the home guarantee scheme, it's called, means that anyone with a 5% deposit can, there's only a limited number of places for this, by the way, but if you're lucky to get one, the government will guarantee the remaining 15% to get your loan to value ratio under 80%. And therefore, you don't need to pay for mortgage insurance, which is quite expensive. Mortgage insurance can cost between 3% and 4%. So the home guarantee scheme certainly allows you to circumvent that. Now, there's only 35,000 places per year, so it's pretty limited. But if you're lucky to be able to utilize it, then that's great. And then the state governments have a variety of, you know, assistances, both in terms of first home buyer grants, stamp duty exemptions and reductions, shared equity schemes. There's a link on the blog on the website that sort of links you to a sort of aggregated website, which allows you to find out what's available in your states. The only proviso with these things is just make sure that they don't entice you to compromise on the quality of property. So some of these schemes are limited in terms of property value, so up to 600 or up to 700, for instance. And so if you're able and willing to get into a location that is more expensive than that, but of a higher quality, then you're actually better off to potentially forgo the assistance from the government in order to get that higher quality asset, which is a good segue into, you know, what can parents do to help their kids get into the property market? Well, you know, there's that old adage that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. And it's true, particularly with children and with children getting into the property market. You know, I think the first and foremost, it's really crucial that the child is really motivated to get into the property market. And whilst we might like to motivate our children to do certain things, the reality is that when they're young adults, they've got to ultimately have the internal motivation or self-motivation, I should say, in order to get into the property market. The next thing they need to do is make sure they demonstrate that they've got a surplus cash flow, you know, so they're able to manage money well, they're able to sort of track expenditure and really build those fundamentals in terms of cash flow management. That's really critical because obviously they're going to take on a financial commitment in a mortgage and they need to demonstrate to themselves and also the bank that they've they've got the capacity to be able to do that. So let's suggest then you've got a child, they're gainfully employed, they've got good employment, they've got the ability to save good money. What next? Well, probably the most effective and common ways for parents to help is by offering what's called a family guarantee. One of the biggest hurdles, or really the biggest hurdle for first-time buyers to get into the market is to save enough deposit. And, you know, their ability to save is pretty slow relative to what happens with property prices. So they can't really outsave the market. It's a real challenge. And if they need to save at least 5% plus costs, you know, cost, stamp duty and so forth, you're looking at sort of a total contribution around 10 to 12% with mortgage insurance, a lot more if you want to avoid mortgage insurance. So that's the big challenge for children. So if your child has good income, good employment, good history of saving, then it's really a case of trying to help them get into the property market as soon as possible and buy the highest quality asset as soon as possible as well, as I've said. And so a family guarantee certainly does that. Essentially what it means is you let your child use some of the equity in your property to secure their loan. And they've been around for a long time, probably around 20 years. So we've helped lots and lots of clients with them. And whilst there's no, excuse the pun, guarantee, these things don't last forever. Typically, I don't think there's ever been one that's lasted longer than 5 years. So what happens is you let them use some of your equity in your property to guarantee their loan. And their property is increased in value. We go back to the bank and say, okay, you can release that guarantee now. And as I said, that typical in our experience over the last 20 years, that's occurred within the first 5 years of having that loan. Then the child is on their own 2 feet and their loan is secured solely by their existing property. Another option that some parents utilize is making a gift, so a cash gift towards the children's ability to go and buy a property. Obviously, if the child has a lower borrowing capacity, that can be challenging as well. And the only way to kind of bridge that gap is by making a gift. One thing that I would counsel clients to consider is what happens if your child enters a relationship, whether that's married or de facto, and then that relationship subsequently dissolves. Will the party that they've had the relationship with, the partner, will they have a claim on their assets? And those assets will obviously include the gift that you've given them. So one way to deal with that is to structure it as a loan, but that's something you might want to think about and or talk to a lawyer about. The last thing I want to talk about is potentially co-owning property with children, which sometimes comes up as a question. So it's like mum and dad might say, look, I'll go and buy 30% of the property and you can own 70% of the property. And the reason to do that is to help them get into a different price point that they can't really afford right now. Look, the problem with that is that parents will always have to be party to loan either as an applicant or guarantor. That can be kind of messy, particularly given both parties are at different stages of life. You know, child's just starting out. Parents might be retired or approaching retirement. And it could cause, you know, inequity, I guess, in terms of estate. But I guess you can probably deal with that in the will. One day, it's not going to be a long-term solution. One day that the parents are going to have to come off title. And when they do, that's going to trigger capital gains tax and almost certainly stamp duty liability. So it's pretty complicated and a bit messy. And I would counsel clients to avoid that sort of transaction if possible. Now, I know this is not a case study episode, but I did want to share an example of a client we just worked with because there was a series of events that really resulted in a great outcome for that client. So I thought it was a really good one to share with you. So Michael was living at home with his parents and was really motivated to buy his first property. To maximize his borrowing capacity, we decided to approach the bank to get a pre-approval for an investment loan. So Michael would still live at home because it was cheaper, of course, and that would help his cash flow position and therefore his borrowing capacity. So Michael went out and purchased a property and he loved it so much, he actually decided to move into the property. He thought, that's it, I'm going to move out of home. You know, so he moved into the property, changed his electoral roll details, connected utilities, all those sorts of things, all the evidence that demonstrated he was actually living in the property. That's important evidence to maintain because then we can demonstrate that the property was his main residence, which means he will get the capital gains tax exemption. And after 6 months of living into the property, we were able to go back to the lender and say, hang on, we originally applied for an investment loan. Michael's actually now living in the property. Here's the evidence to support that. And we converted the loan from investment into owner-occupied because obviously that reduced the interest rate. However, a few months later down the track, Michael decided, hang on, I can't live in the property. It's too expensive. I'm going to move back home. So he moved out of the property and rented out his property. So really, there's three outcomes as a result of this series of events. The first one is that Michael now has a home loan against his property rather than investment loan, which attracts a lower interest rate, but doesn't change the tax nature of the debt. The interest will still be tax deductible because he's renting it out. Michael will enjoy the negative gearing benefits associated with renting his property out. So, you know, that's going to certainly help him from a cash flow perspective. And thirdly, because Michael initially occupied the property as his main residence, he can continue to claim the CGT main residence exemption for up to 6 years, meaning he won't pay any tax on the capital gain. So essentially, Michael's bought himself an investment property with a lower interest rate, will get the negative gearing benefits, but not pay the capital gains tax. So as you can see, it ticks a lot of boxes and a really great outcome for Michael. So if this is something you're interested in, what are typically the first steps? Well, the first step is to understand what the first time buyer's borrowing capacity is. And that's going to be determined by the amount of deposit they have, whether they've got access to a family guarantee and how much income they earn. But once you've set a budget, you know, what is the maximum budget? Then you've got to think about, where do I want to buy? What type of property do I want to buy, and how do I maximize the potential returns over the next 5 to 10 years? Using a buyer's agent for that step, you know, a reputable professional buyer's agent for that step, might seem like an expensive exercise, certainly something that's going to be valuable in the end in terms of buying the right asset at the right time for the right price. So as always, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. There's a discount code in the show notes that allows you to buy a copy of my book for $20, including postage. Unfortunately, we were having some problems with that code. It now works. That's always helpful. And until next time, bye for now. Cheers.